it's not been all throughout history that the Tafsir of Ibn Kathir has been given pride of place. This is not what people studied. Now, if we say, oh, I want to study Tafsir, it'd be like, Ibn Kathir. Obviously, it's the first thing you should read. Then, it would be the Kashaf. It would be the Tafsir of Al-Baydawi. It would be the Tafsir of Al-Razi, which is more extensive. But for the short things that they study in the madrasas, it would be the Hashiyas on Zabakhshari and Al-Baydawi. There was someone else I know who wanted it, but I got in there first. I'm very proud of myself. And then he came in to get his, he came in to buy it, and there was none left. So it's very important to have stories and personal relationship with your books. If you just buy them all online or just have PDF, who has a story with a PDF, you know? I remember running down the street with that.
I would have. Bismillah, we're on to the tafsir, which would be your third and fourth floor, isn't it?
Yeah, so
I can tell.
I've arranged the tafsirs mostly in chronological order. There's a little bit of complication, but...
Okay, so the earliest to the latest?
Yeah, and for me, that's mentally what helps me to remember who came before whom, because
that's pretty cool.
Otherwise I can forget.
Yeah.
So we're going to start the journey up. In what is considered the earliest extant tafsir, that is to say, a tafsir that we still have in circulation and in print. So this is called the tafsir of Muqatil ibn Sulayman.
Okay.
And then, of course, the very famous of At-Tabari. So tafsir of Muqatil died, if I remember, 150. Yeah, so oftentimes their death date is written on the front. And At-Tabari died in 310. So it is considerably later. But right. You know, of course, a lot of people, they hear about old tafsir, they think of At-Tabari. There are plenty of tafsirs that are around from before At-Tabari. And we're going to take a look also, especially at those linguistic type commentaries, which
right.
he drew upon. So At-Tabari, of course, is famous for the fact that he, and he's not the only one, we have Ibn Abi Hatim before him as well, who gathered narrations pertaining to tafsir from the earliest generations. So what has been said sometimes from the Prophet ﷺ himself, or from some of the Sahaba, or from the Tabi'een, or the generation after. This, you know, became like an encyclopedia of these views. But of course, At-Tabari did not just gather views. He himself was, you know, summarizing the different ways that things can be interpreted and giving the reasons that make some of them strong, some of them weaker. He's preferring things. He's talking about the different readings of the Quran. It's a very, very rich work. Actually, a lot richer than some of the people who promote it seem to understand. Because I've heard people say it's just narrations. And they meant
that
in a good way.
I used to think that actually at some point. I was wrong.
It's got plenty of narrations. And that's one of the things, you know, when you open it up.
It's actually overwhelming
yeah.
when you read it.
Yeah. So when you open it up, you just see so many narrations here.
Yeah.
That you could almost miss. But
that he actually has.
Qala Abu Ja'far. That's him.
Yeah.
So it would tend to be before and after.
So the red in your edition is highlighting his comments?
The red is for various purposes. It just helps to mark out certain keywords and things like that.
Okay.
Look, and underline that meant that I read this.
Oh my goodness.
Surat al-Nisa.
Don't remember. Okay.
And At-Tabari's work, because it's so important, has lots of different books written about it and
right.
based on it and using it as a case study. So I have a couple here from Marcus Tafsir about Al-Istidlal. This Al-Istidlal is talking about how he, what he cites as evidence and how he, you know, quotes different texts by way of evidence. And this one, Al-Asalib Al-Arabiya Al-Warida Fi Al-Quran Al-Kareem. Yeah. وَأَثَرُهَا فِي التَّفْسِيرِ The effect of different, you know, expressions and stylistic expressions in the Arabic language. So I haven't read this book, but...
Is that also Markaz Tafsir?
That's also Markaz Tafsir. And this one is also the Sharh of his Muqaddimah. So he's got a quite extensive introduction. And this is a book by Sheikh Al-Tayyar, Musa'ad Al-Tayyar.
Oh, okay.
Also from the Markaz. And another one about Siyaq, which is to say context in the work of At-Tabari. So oftentimes people would think of these tafsirs as not having any attention to context, but in reality they do.
Siyaq al-Nasri, a textual context?
Yeah, and I think different types of context, actually.
I see.
So then I've got al-Imam al-Maturidi. This is the Turkish edition of his tafsir. No, fairly recent. Al-Maturidi is basically a contemporary of Imam al-Tabari.
Okay.
So his tafsir is also important. It's, you know, his work is influential. He is considered the founder of one of the schools of Aqidah. But this is a work that, you know, I'm still getting to grips with, to be honest, in terms of, you know, the way that it works and the way that he speaks and how he makes his points. But there's a couple, there's another work.
I've never even heard of Tafsir Maturidi until now.
Yeah, so it's sometimes called Ta'wilat al-Sunnah.
Okay.
But in this edition, it's called Ta'wilat al-Quran.
Mm.
So then other sort of from, again, going along a little bit into the history, into the progression of history. This is a tafsir of Ibn Furak. And this is a very nice edition that's been prepared by Al-Azhar, actually. As you can see, I've not read all of it. Some of it's still stuck together. It's got a very nice introduction that I can see. And this is only a partial tafsir. I think it gets to Surat al-Mu'minun, if I remember correctly. Oh no, it's from there to the end. And
a concise commentary, looks like.
Yeah, and this particular author is considered as, again, one of the key thinkers in the Ash'ari school.
I see.
So a lot of the tafsirs actually come from Ash'aris and so on. And then there are a few that are more like, say, Ahlul Hadith.
So when they are Ash'ari, are they happen to be Ash'ari and they've done tafsir work, or there's a lot of Ash'ari readings into the, and Ash'ari arguments?
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing that I'd like to understand better, because like, sometimes we associate these attributions to scholars, but really it barely comes through in their works, because that's not what they're, it doesn't seem to me, at least, like they're just obsessed with this idea and they're trying to indoctrinate people through the tafsir into their idea. Maybe they're responding to some criticisms made about their school at some point or the other in the course of their work. But it's sort of strange to,
I mean,
look at authors from that lens.
The one that we discussed, Al-Aqaidiyya.
Right.
Hopefully would give us a good kind of answer on this. But I think in general, because there was like a majority position, like the Asha'ira were dominant at certain times of history in their own places and spaces. So it wasn't about proving something, but there was sometimes a debate with other groups. Not so much like Ahlul Hadith, but actually
the Mu'tazila.
The main dispute is with the Mu'tazila. So we're going to see that when we come to Al-Razi.
Perhaps even with the Maturidiyya?
Although there are differences, but there wasn't much kind of, as far as I know, animosity or a need to...
I've never even heard of such a thing.
Yeah, or a need to get one over on the other school. But with the Mu'tazila, of course, they had very powerful arguments. And there was a need to sort of show, well, our arguments are actually even better than yours. It tends to be just something that doesn't stand out too much, but occasionally when we're studying something in tafsir and I'll tell you, well, this lam, they said this lam can't be for ta'lil, it must be for sayrura or lam al-aqibah.
Right.
So that can just come across as a purely innocent grammatical point. But behind it lies the logical thing, which is, well, Allah's actions cannot be subject to considered to be for a
cause and effect.
It cannot be for, you know, it doesn't have to be, we don't say the reason. We can talk about the wisdom, but we don't talk about his gharad.
I suppose it's similar to in philosophy, being inside the mind of God. Like, you can't say God does this because XYZ.
Yeah, so it just, like, the questions that arise are sometimes related to deeper theological things, and you might not notice. And that's the case, of course, with the Kashaf of Zamakhshari, we'll come to in a moment. This is a book by Al-Wahidi. Al-Wahidi actually has three. Tafsir al-Wajiz, al-Wasit, and al-Basit,
which
means expensive. So this is the middle one.
The middle one.
In four volumes. And one of my teachers is one of the editors, Dr. Abdurrahman Awais, rahimahullah. So, this is al-Wahidi. And it turns out...
What's a salient feature of this tafsir, al-Wasit? Basically all three. What's his?
Well, Basitism is just the middle in length. So his most extensive one is Al-Basit. And this is where you started to see tafsir really take shape in terms of the fullness of the genre and covering a vast number of topics. So Professor Waleed Saleh, who I mentioned a couple of times, has talked about the importance of the Nishapuri school of tafsir. So Al-Wahidi is exemplary in that school. So I have here some kind of things that sometimes things are not necessarily a full tafsir, but like Tafsir al-Imam al-Ghazali. It's just things that are extracted from others of his works. So chronologically, he fits here. So that's why I got him. And he's got Jawahir al-Quran, which is here. And then, in a way, I've missed out Zamakhshari chronologically. You've got then Ibn Atiyah, Ibn al-Jawzi. And then this is a kind of tafsir of Ibn Taymiyyah. Ibn Taymiyyah, rahimahullah, died in 728 of the Hijrah. He doesn't have a full tafsir as such. He has some writings in tafsir which are scattered in what we have now called Majmu' al-Fatawa. You can find things in there. But this book just kind of summarizes some of his tafsir opinions. And this became important to me when I was researching something on Ayatul Qisas.
Yeah.
That was because we were doing the deeper look commentary at the time.
Yeah.
And when I was really struggling to come up with a good explanation for how the wording of the ayah is meant to match with what the fuqaha and mufassirun understand from the ayah, especially al-hurru bil-hurri wal-abdu bil-abdi wal-untha bil-untha.
Right.
You know, free man for free man, slave for slave, woman for woman, or female for female. So when I came across his view in here, I suddenly realized that there was a very different way of reading the ayah that Ibn Taymiyyah advocates. And so, a few years later, I ended up publishing a paper on that subject, which is called Fights and Flights, and it's in the Journal of Quranic Studies. So I'm not going to explain it further.
People should read.
Yes, inshallah, and it's open access. Everyone can get. So other thinkers, Imam al-Shatibi mentioned here. So that kind of reaches the end of that chronological period. Then we could say the next.
What about the Hawashi you were saying that you were going to? Oh, we're still here in the...
Actually, we kind of get into the Hashia story now. So a Hashia means a super commentary or a gloss, a marginal commentary. So one of the beautiful things about the Tafsir tradition, along with other subjects, is that, of course, we've got the text of the Quran, and then the Mufassir is trying to give you what you need to understand the text of the Quran. So he's doing a Tafsir of the text of the Quran.
Right.
Then later on, you know, some of these tafsirs became so well established and well respected that people said, well, what we need is to actually do a commentary on that commentary. Right? So the tafsir of Zamakhshari, for example, let me pull that down here. And I'll pull out one volume of this. So Zamakhshari, of course, is famous for being from the Mu'tazila. So it's a group which has certain ideas which go against the understanding of Ahl Sunnah, broadly conceived. And those beliefs are, you know, are reflected in his tafsir. But aside from that, the tafsir itself has a really magnificent approach to studying the Quran from the perspective of Balagha.
Right.
So you could say he implemented the ideas of Abdul Qahir al-Jurjani, who centered Balagha in understanding the miracle of the Quran. So Zamakhshari's tafsir, you know, implements that project, you could say. And nobody after him has been able to deny how, you know, excellently he captured this dimension and how important his work is then to be built upon. Now, because he was from this Mu'tazila group, there was often felt a need to at least point out those instances, what are those issues, and sometimes you had a whole tafsir written which kind of incorporated from the kashaf of Zamakhshari what, you know, what they felt can be incorporated and then mixed it with other things, you know, to, you know, to add further insights or to make it more Sunni and so on. So after the tafsir of Zamakhshari, we have tafsir of al-Baydawi, tafsir of al-Nasafi, both of which Sunnah is, so al-Baydawi is Shafi'i and al-Nasafi is Hanafi. But they are both from Ahl Sunnah. So they recast a lot of the material from the Kashaf into a more palatable form for the Sunni reader. But in addition to that, we have the Hashia tradition. So this one has got this copy, which is the Kashaf in one volume, which is a bit unusual. It's quite tiny. But you've got the Hashia of Ibn al-Munayyir, which was mostly about calling him out on all this Mu'tazila business. But then this larger Hashia here is one of many, many Hawashi that were written on the Kashaf. But it's one of the later ones and gathers a lot of the insights of earlier ones. And it's by Al-Allama Al-Tibi.
Mm.
So this is coming in 17 volumes.
It's pretty exhaustive.
Yes.
Compared to the Kashaf itself.
Yeah, so up here, we've got the text of the Kashaf. And then below the line, you've got Tibi's commentary. So then whatever there's something in bold, it tells you, well, there's a bit of a commentary on it down below. So if you find trouble sometimes understanding the words of some of the ulama, sometimes there would be hawashi, which help you to explain what the alim intends and what he's getting at. Yeah. So the Hashia tradition is a hugely fascinating and understudied part of tafsir.
Mm.
And actually, there needs to be a lot more focus on how that works, because it's where things become really, really in-depth. Because in the Hawashi, they're kind of like, okay, the main job of explaining the Quran was done. But now I'm going to take this tiny little thing that the scholar mentioned and I'm going to, oh, that's interesting. Let's elaborate on that. Whereas if they were writing a fresh tafsir, they might feel, well, yeah, obviously, that's too much of a tangent.
Got it.
The Hashia tradition is tangents, you know, upon tangents is what it's all about. And it's so much fun. So I'm going to show you some more when we get around to Al-Baydawi and Co. So this is just another book about the Kashaf and its i'tizal content. And then, ta-da, trying not to fall, Al-Tafsir al-Kabir of Al-Imam
Tafsir al-Kabir.
Let me bring these down as a few other books related to it. So, of course, Imam Razi's Tafsir is very important in the tradition and very important to me personally, because I have had the honor of translating parts of it, including from volume one. I'll show you what a translator's copy of a tafsir looks like. So you just open any page and you'll see, you know, this is very extensively annotated. I have here a list of typos in the edition that I'm using. So, you know, this is where I worked from to translate volume one.
Mm.
And, you know, there's no good copy of this tafsir at the current time. So a lot of people ask, which one do I use? This is the one I use, Dar al-Hadith of Cairo. But it has, like, all the copies that exist in the market today. Just many, many flaws. Just inaccurate things. The sentences are wrong. You know, it'll turn night into day. Iman into kufr and vice versa.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So the Razi's tafsir is very important. It takes from the Kashaf to a large extent. It takes also from Al-Wahidi to a large extent. It engages with lots of other tafsirs.
He's critical of the Zamakhshiri's views on many things, or at least his i'tizal.
Definitely he's critical of i'tizal, yes. But like Zamakhshiri is giving you the linguistic reading of the ayah, and so on. He quotes him approvingly a lot. He even quotes his stories and stuff like that. So when Razi tells you about the names of the brothers of Yusuf alayhi salam, he's taking it from Zamakhshiri. But then when he's talking about whether Yusuf alayhi salam did anything wrong with the wife of the Aziz, well, Al-Wahidi says, yeah, he did. He got very close to doing some very bad things. And Al-Razi spends, you know, pages and pages just slamming Al-Wahidi. Like, how dare he suggest such a thing? And it doesn't make any sense. And nothing before it, nothing after it supports Al-Wahidi's view. Al-Wahidi's only claim, only support is to say, oh, lots of Mufassirin said it. He said, you know, so what? You know, if some Mufassirin said something, doesn't make it true. That's Al-Razi telling you that.
Mm.
Okay. So when we say it, it shouldn't be such a surprise. He's saying, you know, other than just like puffing yourself up with names of people that you quote, you have to have evidence.
Right.
And if there's some Mufassirin who said this, there's other Mufassirin who said that.
Yeah.
So just the claim, you know, appeal to authority is not enough.
Yeah.
So that's how our tradition is. You know, people sometimes think a matter is settled if it's stated in a book.
Right.
Right. But as the single idea can travel through the books, and it can travel approvingly if a later author just feels, yeah, what they said is fine, I'll write it as well. Right. It doesn't mean they independently thought
reevaluated
about that. It. And then it came just, to an
ijma. Sometimes something hits your intellectual radar and, you know, alert goes off. Other times you just tacitly figure, yeah, I could see why that's right. And you just kind of move on.
Yeah.
And it, you know, sometimes I feel like I may have studied a surah, discussed it, talked about it, thought about it. And then somebody brings up something. I was like, yeah, I never thought about that. Wow, that completely changes my view. Mm. Now I need to reinvestigate something I thought I had studied. So, and that is evidenced in our tradition. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the way it is when it comes to earlier opinions. You know, they may challenge them. They may just let them pass. But there's so much richness even just in following how an opinion traces.
Yeah, the tracing of that opinion, yeah.
A few books about Ar-Razi, about his life, his, you know, his books. This is Alwani's book as well. Al-Munasabat al-Qur'aniya inda Imam Ar-Razi fi tafsirihi mafatih al-ghayb.
So it's an extraction from the book, huh? Extraction of his tafsir.
Well, it's focusing on how does he understand munasabat, which is to say kind of contextual connections.
Yeah.
Between, for example, the end of one surah, the start of the next surah, or between one ayah and the next, or one passage and the next. So it's quite a nice study by an Azhari scholar, Rafat al-Masri. Al-Manqul wal-Ma'qul fi tafsir al-Kabir. So something about kind of the balance between what's typically called tafsir bil-masur, tafsir bil-ra'i.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of, yeah, transmission-based and rational-based approaches. So then, continuing on our historical journey, we've got here your favorite, but your edition cannot be as pretty as mine.
Ooh, Al-Qurtubi.
Al-Qurtubi. But look at the
experience. Yeah, yours is prettier.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very pretty.
I mean, I don't buy it solely for that reason, but it's a factor. And I have this thing on Twitter where if I see someone shares an edition of something, I say, but mine is prettier, and I put a picture. Because I've got some really pretty books. MashaAllah. Ever say MashaAllah?
MashaAllah, MashaAllah.
So, of course, Al-Qurtubi, you know, from the Andalusian tradition, from the Ahkam al-Quran tradition. So there's a certain subset of tafsirs which, in a way, like we talked about thematic tafsir and how like a thematic treatment. So Ahkam al-Quran is a kind of thematic treatment as well. So if I wanted to, I could put it up in the themes. But Al-Qurtubi kind of takes those works and he presents what they have along with very more general tafsir concerns. But the title Al-Jami' al-Ahkam al-Quran reflects that the core thing is what are the rulings that are extracted from that. Oh, this is something I want to show you. Okay, check this out. So this is a four-volume book. It's specifically about the poetic lines quoted by Al-Qurtubi in his tafsir. So in each one, it tells you sort of where it appears, in what context, what was the purpose of citing it. And sometimes it will tell you it comes from this poet and this collection. It will tell you sometimes the meaning of the words, which as somebody who didn't study Shi'r very extensively, you know,
it's crucial, a gap. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't done too much with this book yet, but it's going to be something I'll give some more attention to. Maybe we can work on it together.
Possibly, yeah.
Because when we're reading through tafsir, we often come across a line of shi'r, and if we're in a hurry, we'll sort of say, okay, let's pass over that.
Yeah.
But then we are missing something which is actually part of the fabric of tafsir.
Yeah.
And that's in order to show that the linguistic point that's being made can be backed up with some things that exist outside of the Quran.
Yeah.
Especially in things that are prior to the Quran.
Kind of revisiting my studies of balagha, looking at shi'r. That's something that I couldn't really find the resources to study properly for a while, right? And my first kind of easy in was Raymond Farron, because he had done so much stuff on Shi'r Jahili, taught courses on it, put materials together in English for it. And then I realized that it's not just that the Shahid is being used in the Tafsir, like, okay, this word is being used by the poet here, and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
There are lots of really interesting literary and balaghi techniques that poets are employing very creatively.
Mm.
And then the Quran is taking, you know, a unique step even above that. But if you don't understand the human limit, the human creative limit, then you don't get to appreciate really the divine, you know, touch above and beyond it, right? So that becomes important for that reason. And it is definitely something that I'm still lacking in, and I really want to deepen my knowledge of.
Yeah, so for those who are still, you know, at the right point in their lives and their paths, and you have a chance to, you know, master the Arabic language, including the literature aspect of it, then,
yeah,
you know, grab onto that with both hands, because one day you'll be old like us.
Yep.
Right, so the next work is a really interesting one. It's a recent publication.
Okay.
But the author was, as you can see, a little bit after the time of Al-Razi and Al-Qurtubi, and before the likes of Ibn Juzay and Ibn Kathir.
Kashf al-Asrar wa Hatak al-Astar.
Wa Hatak al-Astar, yeah.
Hatak al-Astar. What's so, Hatak?
I
don't know what that is.
I mean, it can mean like violating, but it was just like breaking through the veils and the barriers. Yeah. It's quite a violent title, I think. Kashf al-Asrar wa Hatak al-Astar. Yeah, getting rid of all the barriers. This work by someone called As-Safadi.
Mm.
What's weird about it is that you, when reading it, you almost feel like it was written as by a modern scholar.
Really?
He leans quite heavily towards Quran-only approach, which is not something you tend to find in classical works. Mm. So he just tries to really take the Quranic text on itself. He doesn't give much space towards athar and sunan and so on. So it just adds something different to the Quranic library. And for me, because I've been researching Tafsir al-Quran bil-Quran, you know, these are some books written to TQQ, as I call it. They haven't really taken into account of As-Safadi, but it does turn out that As-Safadi could be considered the first book of Tafsir al-Quran bil-Quran that we have.
Mm.
In terms,
yeah, of, I'm noticing. I'm not seeing narrations here, in several places.
Yeah, and in the introduction, he explains his kind of stance on that. And it's an interesting one. He's not an entirely conventional mufassir, but at the same time, it's not like some guy in a university in 2020. Right. Next is Tafsir of Ibn Juzay. This is actually a book about Tafsir of Ibn Juzay, and this is first of four volumes. I've been teaching this tafsir for the last 2 years. We have a group of students who've been going through it with me, and we're actually, they're watching me edit a draft translation that was done. So inshallah, once this is all finished, we will have a publication of, what you're looking at here is the sort of lexicon part at the beginning where he talks about the meanings of words, and then he gets into the tafsir proper.
Mm.
So yeah, we'll have a full translation of this inshallah. I'll be able to make that widely available. As a tafsir, it's a kind of brief one. Consider it a mukhtasar. It's not the briefest of all tafsirs, but it's generally on the side of brevity. Again, Andalusian scholar. He died in a battle there in Tarifa. So I'm quite keen to go back to Spain and visit, you know, Córdoba and Tarifa and, you know, some of these places where not far from here, active, you know, scholars and so much creativity, you know.
So much service to Quran.
Yeah. And another very important one from Granada. Yeah. So we had Cordoba. Okay. So Granada, Abu Hayyan, Tafsir of Abu Hayyan. I actually don't have a copy here of Abu Hayyan's Tafsir. Not because it's not important, but because you have?
Al-Bahr al-Muhit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have it.
The reason I don't have...
I have two copies.
Yeah?
Probably not one enough to impress you, so...
That's the problem. So the reason I didn't buy it at the time is because the editions that were available were considered to be not very good, and I wasn't sort of in great need of Abu Hayyan's tafsir at that time. I certainly didn't feel that way. But probably I should cross that boundary. I do have for his student, though. So, very important student of Abu Hayyan is... As-Samin al-Halabi, So this is
Samin al-Halabi.
Samin al-Halabi, which would translate to the stout Alepite or Alepine.
Yeah.
A stout Alepine. Nobody quite knows why is he called Samin al-Halabi. Was he Samin or not? We don't really know. Some people call him Ibn Samin al-Halabi, so maybe it was his father who was stout and from Aleppo. Anyway, he has got this tafsir. We could call it a tafsir, but it's very sort of specifically focused on the I'rab and things related to I'rab and qira'at. So you could say that content reflects mostly from his teacher as well, Abu Hayyan.
Right.
And both of them also were quite strong in their defense of the seven qira'at, seven canonical readings of the Quran.
Okay.
In the face of, you know, certain things said by the grammarians. Inshallah, we'll touch on this topic when we look more at the qira'at section. But sometimes I put the books that are related to a particular tafsir next.
Right, so these are all related to
Samin al-Halabi.
Are they responses to his work or criticisms of his work or what are they?
No,
are
this
they
is basically summarizing a particular aspect that you find in his work.
Hmm.
So it's like a thematic extraction and study. And the Bayn al-Sana'at al-Nahwi wal-Ma'na and the Samin al-Halabi is a fascinating kind of topic. Like, how do you get between the meaning, the intended meaning, and then the pure grammar rules? You know, does one necessarily follow from the other?
Right.
So my teachers would tell me, Al-I'rabu far'u al-ma'na. I'rab depends on and it is an extension of the meaning.
Right.
Based on when you understand the meaning, you know what the I'rab should be. Right? But at the same time, on some level at least,
the
you need to know the I'rab first and then from that it generates the meaning.
Yeah.
So how do these things relate together? It's actually slightly more complicated than we often think.
Egg and chicken.
Because it's true, you can't actually determine what the I'rab is until you also have a sense of what the meaning is.
Right.
It goes kind of around in circles. All right. So then we come to one of the most famous tafsirs, the tafsir Ibn Kathir. We pulled them down earlier. And Ibn Kathir is a student of Ibn Taymiyyah, rahimahullah, and is, you know, his book takes a fair amount and critically analyzes material from al-Tabari and others, like Ibn Abi Hatim, for example. But you can find that al-Tabari's presence is here. This particular edition is like the most Salafi edition that I could find, because I actually was interested in seeing the footnotes from the likes of Ibn Uthaymeen, Muqbil al-Wadi'i, al-Sa'di, al-Albani, and various others, right? So there's some additional footnotes here. Mm-hmm. And this work, of course, Ibn Kathir's tafsir is very respectable and respected. But we should also understand that there is a history and a reason behind that respect. It's not been all throughout history that the tafsir of Ibn Kathir has been given pride of place. If you were to look at the seminaries that were teaching tafsir and other subjects in the Muslim world,
mm-hmm.
for example, in the Ottoman lands, or in the East, or in North Africa, or wherever you look, you would not find that Tafsir Ibn Kathir has any place in that. This is not what people studied. Now, if you say, oh, I want to study Tafsir, it'd be like, Ibn Kathir. Obviously, it's the first thing you should read. Then, it would be the Kashaf. It would be the Tafsir of Al-Baydawi. It would be the Tafsir of Al-Razi, which is more extensive. But for the short things that they study in the madrasas, it would be the hashiyas on Zabakhshiri and Al-Baydawi, right? Both of whom are earlier than Ibn
Kathir. So the earlier seminaries weren't focused on things like Al-Tabari?
Not to a large extent. I mean, Al-Tabari, again, being so voluminous, was not so practical.
The reason I ask that is, I would imagine the earlier seminaries would be more interested in something that's got narrations more. Even though Razi cites narrations, but it's not focused on the narrations, for example.
So narration-based study wasn't the centerpiece. The centerpiece was...
That's shocking to hear.
...was analysis, which is grammatical analysis. Yes, for sure, the approach to Athar was there. Later on, we have a Suyuti's Ad-Durr al-Manthur.
Right.
Which kind of strips down works like a Tabari and so on, to just the narrations. And that can be useful. In fact, what happens is then you get later Mufassirin, like a Shawkani, who's over here.
That's much later. That's like
much later, yeah. But what he does is in the beginning he says, well, I've taken a Durr al-Manthur by Suyuti, and then I've brought all my best brain powers and I've combined them together. Bain al-Manquli wal-Ma'aqul, right? So it's never the case that people sort of preferred a purely athar-based approach or narration-based approach.
Mm.
And the centerpieces of the curriculum were not based on that. The Tafsir ibn Kathir has actually got a lot more in it again than people
say. Yeah, it's got insights.
And it is a worthwhile work. But it's just important to know that at some point, at the turn of the 20th century, certain forces, and by the way, it wasn't the Saudis as such, that comes a bit later. But even in Egypt and so on, those who saw in it what they liked decided, well, let's print that. Let's fund the printing of that. And then later on, other people saw it and said, well, let's translate that. Let's fund the translation and distribution of that around the world. And then let's put that onto a CD-ROM. And then the CD-ROM gets turned into websites and apps. And so everyone just thinks, well, of course, Tafsir ibn Kathir is the most important tafsir because it's the one I've heard of, right? It's the one that's on the websites. It's the one that's on all the apps. It must be because it's the best one. That's not how it works. That's not why it's the most prominent one. It's because of some decisions that have been made.
Interesting.
And where the money is put.
You know, now we talk about people on social media that have the most following, almost having the most validation in a subject or a field.
Well, he must know, because look how many followers they've got.
Right. It's a human tendency. It doesn't depend on technology. Technology only accelerates the same tendency.
So a little bit left before we start to come to the modern period.
Right.
So we've got here a Tafsir al-Mahayimi. Have you had a look at this
one? I have never seen that before.
So this one can be seen as a precursor to al-Biqa'i.
Really?
Who's important because it's also kind of, he says in it that he's...
I believe the exact same copy of Nazm al-Durr.
Yeah. Nazm al-Durr, you've got either the Indian edition, which is many more volumes than this, or this is Dar al-Kutub al-Ilmiya.
I have this one.
Edition, which is...
Oh, come on, I was almost feeling good about myself for a second.
I mean, I just don't like the... I don't like the green, but...
Yeah, I know. The green is kind of annoying.
I thought I would like it. I found that I don't. And then this one... He comes a little bit earlier. So al-Biqa'i is... his death date is...
Can I see this one? Al-Mahayimi, you said?
Al-Mahayimi. So he's an Indian scholar.
Really?
And he's also famous for being... a prominent Sufi. So I think he's sometimes known as Makhdum al-Mahayimi. So you've got here another approach before al-Biqa'i. Al-Biqa'i also draws from someone called al-Harali, who there's been some studies on his work, but I don't have any copy of Harali. But al-Biqa'i often quotes somebody before him as well. With al-Biqa'i,
is this on any of the digital platforms like Furqan or?
Probably not. It might be on
al-Tafsir.
Al-Tafsir.net. Al-Tafsir.com. Al-Tafsir.com might be there. But I don't know.
Okay.
Very
interesting. Because when it comes to this, even Mir or anybody else didn't cite Mahayimi.
Yeah.
Despite him being Indian.
Well, I'll tell you what. Islahi in his introduction mentions him.
No way.
Yeah. Because I just wrote a paper on the history of Tafsir al-Quran bil-Quran. So then I was about to say, because I don't know who I heard mentioning Mahayimi. I was about to say Mahayimi's name is sometimes mentioned in this connection. I didn't know who has said it. Then I realized,
Islahi. And then he mentions Waliyuddin Malwi.
Yeah, who it just sounds like he's just giving a kind of allusion.
Muhammad ibn Ahmad ibn Uthman al-Uthmani al-Dibaji al-Malwi.
So in a way, he's trying to just kind of show that there are people before me who had ideas that are somewhat related to what I'm doing, but not good enough. That's basically what he's telling you. The last ones that I've got up here after Biqa'i himself.
Yeah.
Biqa'i is noteworthy for two main reasons. One, this tanasub approach, this kind of structural flow. And number two,
very poetic language. He was very.
I struggle with al-Biqai if I'm honest.
Yes, I tried. Like he just walamma, walamma, walamma.
Okay, but that's his formula of indicating why something is connected to the previous.
Yeah, but his the run-on sentences, man, they just go on forever. You're like, where did it?
Well, I
like there's Arabic, and then there's like.
So Sheikh Ali Hani in Jordan, who I've had the pleasure to meet a few times. And I was speaking recently to one of his longer-term students, Dr. Suhail Hanif. And he made me realize that I've probably been underrating al-Biqai or giving him not enough attention as I should. Because it seems that, you know, from Sheikh Ali Hani's approach, that careful reading of al-Biqai can be very, very fruitful. And if you look carefully at what he's doing with reference to etymologies and little hints as to what the... If he hints at something about where the word is coming from, but he's not like going to... spell that out for you.
Right.
You have to kind of read between the lines with him, which is another challenge. And then he also uses a lot of biblical material, which is the other thing.
Yes, yes.
Again, Waleed Saleh has written about. Biqa'i earned a lot
of
controversy.
That reminds me a little bit of Kashaf too. Kashaf used biblical material, didn't he? Like Zawakhshari used.
Yes. But what Biqa'i did that was a bit unusual was he used it almost as if to say, you know, this is... this functions as tafsir, you know, we can quote at length, like whole pages. After discussing something from the Quranic perspective, then say, okay, let's read some pages from the Arabic Bible. And some people questioned him on that and disagreed with him on that. And he wrote a treatise.
What time period in history do we place him?
So it said here, 885, I think it says death date. Yeah. I'm so bad at reading Arabic. I can, but I read it like this. Al-Mutawaffa Sanata 885. just to rest my brain.
Yes, yes, I sympathize with your struggle. So by the way, I was paying attention to when we were speaking to some of the Arabs in Riyadh. Was paying attention to their use of numbers. They were wrong every time.
In what way? Oh, like they don't go from smallest to largest?
No, the gender agreements and disagreements that are considered agreement. They were not making those changes. Regardless of the ma'dud being...
Well, the receptionist was trying to tell me the Wi-Fi code and she said, arba'a marat. So I was about to say 4-4. And then she says, arba'a marat. I mean, 4-4-4-4. 4-4 times.
Yeah.
So yeah, it can be hard to process sometimes what they're saying. Right, so then just let's conclude here on the hashiyas.
Okay,
so
yeah.
We talked about the hashiya on... the Kashaf.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the hashiyas on the Kashaf. Then we have got hashiyas on Al-Bidawi.
Okay.
So, because I don't have a separate copy of Bidawi as Bidawi, but I have these hashiyas on Al-Bidawi. Ignore Sheikh Sharam.
And Bidawi is focused on Balagha also, isn't he?
To an extent, because like he's following the kind of structural basis of Kashaf as well.
And he's sunnifying the Kashaf. In a sense?
Yeah, in a very simplistic way, that is exactly what that's exactly what we see.
And so what is the benefit of the hashiya of Baydawi?
Baydawi incorporates more than just the Kashaf. So he incorporates from Al-Razi, he incorporates from Al-Raqib Al-Asfahani as well.
Oh, wow, okay.
So...
meaning his dictionary?
Not his dictionary, he's got a tafsir.
Al-Raqib Al-Asfahani has a tafsir?
Uh-huh.
I did not know that. Yeah,
but it's not, I don't think it's like all published. I think we've only got it in part. But so Bidawi is incorporating those insights. And then instead of doing a hashiya on the dodgy, dodgy Kashaf, you could do a hashiya on the lovely Ahl-Sunnah al-Bidawi. Right? So that's perhaps...
So you don't have to undo anything.
Yeah, so that work has pretty much been done. So this is a very recent publication with the hashiya of Imam Suyuti. Remember, I said Imam Suyuti of the Itqan fame.
Yeah.
Many, 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 many works. But one of them is his hashiya on Al-Baydawi. And that's a new edition published by Darul Lubab. Oh, I should have mentioned, when I said that there's no good edition of Al-Razi, well, Darul Lubab are now doing an edition of Al-Razi. Inshallah, it should be excellent because they, you know, they care about what they're doing. Unlike everybody else who printed Al-Razi before. So the famous hashiyas in Bidawi More famous than Suyuti's, in fact, is Hashyat al-Shihab al-Khafaji on Tafsir al-Baydawi. This print, not very good. And Hashyat al-Qunawi is another one that a friend of mine was pressuring me so much to buy it. Eventually, I just did. And it's good. but I bought this purely out of peer pressure, this one. But certainly, it's the most extensive hashia that I've got in Baydawi, and I've found it interesting for some research purposes. And then I've got also hashia up here on the Jalalain. So Jalalain, again, our man, As-Suyuti.
Right.
He did the second half of it, which is actually the first half in the book, because Imam Jalaluddin al-Mahalli did the second half of the Quran, then he passed away, and then Imam Suyuti came and completed from Al-Baqarah to the middle of the Quran.
Oh, wow.
So that's why it's called Al-Jalalain, because two Jalals, Jalaluddin al-Mahalli, Jalaluddin al-Suyuti. And then we have got this hashia on it, which is by someone who's called the Camel. I mean, he's got a name, is Sulaiman bin Umar al-Ujayli, al-Shafi'i, who is famous as Al-Jamal. So Hashyat al-Jamal al-Jalalain. So sometimes you've got their name, the fat Aleppite, and now the Camel, Hashyat of the Camel.
On the Jalalain. For those of you who don't understand what an Aleppite is, someone from Aleppo.
Right.
The fat man from Aleppo.
Yeah, okay. Allegedly. So Al-Iqlil, this is a hashia on the tafsir of An-Nasafi. Mm. As I mentioned, An-Nasafi's tafsir is very heavily based on Zamakhshari's. But then this is a hashia.
I have a copy of An-Nasafi.
You should?
Yeah.
I can give you one.
I got.
Oh, you got.
I don't have Iqlil, but...
Yeah, so this, I'm sure some of these were recommended to me by the Sheikh Ali Hani recommended this to me. We should definitely have it.
Okay.
And I remember I bought this in Istanbul, and there was someone else I know who wanted it, but I got in there first. I'm very proud of myself. And then he came in to get his, he came in to buy it, and there was none left.
He's like, what about that one? It sold. Who bought it?
And you, I was halfway down the street. So it's very important to have stories and personal relationship with your books. If you just buy them all online or just have PDF, who has a story with a PDF, you know? I remember running down the street with that.
I would have been a troll that rhymes too. How do you feel now that I bought Iqlil? Very nice, very nice.
Yes.
Alhamdulillah. So this was a good run through the classic. And Al-Iqlil, these Hawashi are what time frame?
So Suyuti died in, as I said, it died in 9/11.
Right.
And then these are chronological because I did check that, but I can't remember their exact dates. This is 1069 al-Khafaji.
Okay, so this is getting further and further by a century, yeah.
And this, he was 1195.
Wow, so it's getting more and more contemporary.
Yeah. So these ones have literally hundreds of hawashi. Not all of them are hugely significant, but there's quite a few significant ones. Because in some of the seminary system in the Ottoman times, at least, it used to be quite normal that you would write a hashia, not necessarily because the world needed you to do it, but because it was a process. Now imagine that. Imagine setting your students that, you know, to show that you have mastered the tradition, write a hashia on a tafsir. So then you have to show that you know what you're talking about,
right,
when you're explaining it. And that would be like a master's dissertation, something like that. And if it was good enough, it could become a publication one day, you know. If not, then it just gets added to the pile of hawashi.
Wow. Remarkable. SubhanAllah. So now, inshallah, in our next discussion, we're going to move on to
next
some
time
more contemporaries.
Yeah, pretty much the modern period or right before the modern period, inshallah.
Okay, inshallah. All right, jazakallahu khairan. Fantastic stuff. Barakallahu li wa lakum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salam everyone, it's Dr. Suhaib here. You've had the chance to look inside my library. Now I'd love to take you inside some of what I've learned from there, especially in the flagship project of the Ibn Ashur Center, which is distilling the insights of a great mufassir, Muhammad Al-Tahir Ibn Ashur. We have a special course for you on Surah Yasin. I'd love you to get involved. I'd love you to benefit from our new translation and commentary on the Quran, head over to ibnashur.com/academy to find out more. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.